requested them to become his priests. There's no purple. This is quite an interesting section, the last many verses is it? So, yeah. In verse 34 onwards, many powerful instructions that the sages are giving to Vasudeva. And we see that all Vasudeva is the one who's being addressed, because he's actually approached the sages and they're asking various questions. And he's being addressed with all the kings are listening very carefully, as well as Krishna and Balaram also listening to what the sages are saying. So again, we see that Krishna and Balaram, they're giving us practical demonstration of how to conduct ourselves. And we see that, you know, in most ordinary dealings, we see that Krishna, Balaram, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Ramachandra, they all acted in a way that was very instructive for others. We see here that Lord Krishna, he's listening to what the sages are saying, because they're great Vedantis, they're great knowledgeable persons in the Shastra, and they're able to give transcendental knowledge. And we see here that they start straight away, in the saying that it's been definitely concluded that work is counteracted by further work. So, okay, we're performing so many activities in this material world, and as Krishna explains in the Gita, these activities cause bondage if they're just ordinary activities. But by performing further activities, we're able to take out, we're able to overcome the result of those activities. It's just like Prabhupada gives a really interesting analogy. It's just like you have a thorn. Right, you get a thorn in your foot, and you know an easy way of getting the thorn out is by using another thorn to take that thorn out. Because the thorn is quite hard, the tip of the thorn is generally very hard. So you can use that thorn to pierce the back part of the thorn, which is not so hard, and pull the thorn out. So in the same way here, turn this down a little bit, it's coming out of that. In the same way here, we see that they're explaining how, maybe that's too far. Activity causes bondage, and by further activity, we're able to overcome that bondage. But what is the difference? The first activity is done for the satisfaction of the self, or the extent of self, meaning the family, the relatives, the country, the planet, humankind. These are all material activities. The basis is some material outcome, some personal satisfaction. Therefore, it causes bondage. As Krishna says, it is the Yamaha Kakkama on that thing. Loko Yam Kamakamaka, Karatam Kamakamaka from today, but some of us are not sure. That work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu must be performed, otherwise, your work causes bondage. It causes us to become bound up in this world because it's for ourselves. And then they go on to explain, though, when one executes Vedic sacrifices as a means of worshiping Vishnu, same thing. Yajna means mission. It's the name of Vishnu. Kaunon Yajna. We need to do activities for him. And this way they liberate us. It's exactly the same step as here. By performing these activities for Vishnu, it causes that liberation. And then they go on to explain, they confirm this, saying, learned authorities who see through scripture. They're saying that this is given in the Shastra, it's not just our opinion. So we see that whenever we're listening to someone speak, we don't want to hear their opinion, because everyone's got an opinion, and it's not of much value. Some people have, Krishna, when Krishna says, what does he say in the Gita? What's that verse? There's one verse where it says, this is my opinion. Matahana uses the word Matahana, my opinion. This opinion is of value, because we know this is the supreme opinion, this is the absolute opinion. But mostly when people say, well, I think this and I think that, Prabhupada sometimes would say, if you think this, go stand in the closet. He wasn't impressed when people would say, I think this, I think that. No, what we're interested in is what the learned authorities say based on the Shastra, based on their realization of Shastra. And we can hear, you listen to Srila Prabhupada when he speaks, he's speaking. Sometimes he gives classes, and they're basically start to finish slokas. He just starts in the beginning with a sloka, and you go, the whole thing is just sloka after sloka after sloka after sloka, just saying what is given in the Shastra, saying what the great personalities, what information is there. Because, as is explained in the Gita, it says, Jnanas Tapadashana, the self-realized souls, they have seen the truth, therefore they can impart the knowledge to you. Because they're seeing, they have this tapadashi, they're seeing the truth. It's not just something that's ambiguous or vague or they don't really understand it so much. No, they're actually seeing the truth. Therefore, because they're seeing the truth, they're able to impart it to us. It's just like, you know, I'll give you an example. My phone's not working, right? So I pulled it apart last night to try and figure out what was going on. I just looked at it and I was like, I got no idea what's going on there. You know, so I just dusted it all off, blew all the dust out, stuck it back together, and it seems to work a bit better. But you know, if I try to start to pull things apart, and actually I did this years ago, someone's keyboard was not working. They had a very fancy keyboard, and everything was all the things were contained in the pedal. You know, that was all the technology was contained down there. And I started to sort of, I said, oh, I'll pull apart and see what I can do. So I pulled apart and I'm poking this. Oh, I've done something and fried the whole thing out. And it costs hundreds of dollars to fix it. Yeah. So it's like, you know, if we don't actually understand something, how can we describe that to somebody else? And actually, as we can see with a mundane example like that, I'm playing on someone's keyboard and I actually did more damage than good. So in the same way, someone has improper knowledge, and we see this, there's so many examples of someone who has improper understanding of spiritual knowledge. They try to put themselves in a big position, you know, and pretend that they're gurus or whatever, and you know, sit up on a big seat and you know, they have the hugging blessings, or they just, you know, do ashirvads and things like this. And people are actually thinking that I'm getting so much spiritual benefit out of this, but actually, as it describes in the Bhagavatams, is yeni rabindaksha vimukta manina. Vimukta manina. They're thinking they're liberated. Yeah? They're actually thinking they're very, very advanced. But he said, Abhishuddha Buddhaya. They have impure intelligence. They think they're advanced, but actually they have some immature desires. How can they be advanced if they have material desires? Most people don't even understand the difference between material and spiritual. They're thinking that yoga is spiritual. No, yoga is just some bodily exercises. I mean, you know, many of us may do yoga, and it's good for maintaining the body. It may help the mind become a bit more peaceful, but it's not going to help us understand the absolute truth. We need to understand these and see them in their perspective. So many people think that, oh, this is you know, spiritual activity. I'm doing some yoga, or I'm having good thoughts about people. This is spiritual activity. They don't actually understand, because this Abhishuddha Buddhaya has an impure intelligence. And I do not remember the last half. But it winds up saying that, you know, because of their impure intelligence, they're pushed down again into the cycle of birth and death. So this is what's happening. These people are thinking they're spiritually advanced. They're thinking that I'm able to, you know, impart transcendental knowledge to others. But they actually have this impure intelligence, this Abhishuddha Buddhaya. Prabhupada quotes these verses quite a bit. And so because of this, one who follows such a person, I was said, Andaya Tandai Upaniyamaska Kipisha Tandram Uridam Nabaha. It's just like a blind person, Anda, leading another blind person. And what can happen? You can imagine what would happen, you know, if you have some blind person, you know, leading some other blind person along the road, you know, and they walk onto the freeway. And they might hear the car zoom, 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 but they may not know what's going on. They may not know how close danger is. And they may fall into a ditch. Which actually what it says, Andaya Tande Upaniyama Aste Krish. You know, just as a blind man, led by another blind man, missed the right path and fall into the ditch. So, a materially attached man, led by a similarly materially attached man, becomes bound up. You know, Andaya Tande Upaniyama Aste Krish from Uru Dhamni. This Uru is very, very strong. Uru Dhamni. This rope, Badha, they're bound up. They become bound up by the ropes of material attachment, because the person they're following is also materially attached. So it's very important in spiritual life that we actually have to understand, we have to find someone who understands the absolute truth, in truth. Not just to have some vague idea about it. Oh, I think it's like this, I think it's like that. Whereas we were saying last time we had class, this neti neti, as it is that verse where it talks about the yogis who can approach the tip of the toe of the lotus feet of the Lord. And that this by elimination of the mundane, this neti-neti philosophy, saying, oh no, it's not this, oh no, it's not that. They're saying what it's not, but they don't know what it is. So in order to understand the absolute truth, you know, anything, you know, if you want to know what 1 + 1 =, you need to find someone who knows that, and then find out from them. Simple thing. You can't just speculate, because you'd go on speculating for countless years and never conclude the right truth. So that's the point the sages are making here, is, you know, they've actually, it's not just their opinion, it's not just something they dreamt up, but through you know, hearing from the authorized persons, they've actually understood what the conclusion is. And then, it's interesting because then they go on to actually discussing how to overcome the effects of material nature, which I was reading this morning, this is really interesting. And of course we've heard this all many times before, but it's very clearly spelled out here. You know, because there are various attachments we all have in this material world. And here they're pointing out how to overcome. He says, an intelligent person should learn to renounce his desire for wealth by performing sacrifices and acts of charity. This is actually the duty of a grihastha, is to give in charity. And we see, even though Prabhupada's father, every day he would have guests in the house. Every day. He would have at least 3 or 4 guests come to the people at different times. So this helps us to overcome, because we think, oh, I've got such a nice house, this is mine. But actually the house is meant to serve others. One time, a devotee was getting married, and he went to Srila Prabhupada and he said, Srila Prabhupada, do you have any special instructions for me, because now I'm getting married? And, the story goes, this devotee was hoping to get some, intimate rust kind of, how he and his wife could, get into a intimate situation. So he was expecting something like that. And then Prabhupada said, yes, during it, in the middle of the day when you're about to have your midday meal, then you go out into the street and you call out in a loud voice, if anyone is hungry, please come to my house and have something to eat. And you say this 3 times. So the body was a little bit warm. He didn't know what was going on. So then he just sort of left it for a while. And a few days later he asked the same question. And he said to Prabhupada, do you have any special instructions for me now that I'm about to get married? And Prabhupada said, yes. In the middle of the day, before you take your midday meal, you go out in the street, and 3 times you call out in a very loud voice, if anyone is hungry, please come to my house and have something to eat. So the point Prabhupada was making here is the duty of a grihastha is charity. Grihastha is meant to give in charity. So everything, you have new devotees or people to come. Because then you become, this is going to help you become detached. One who makes money. What is the purpose of the money? To make a big bank balance? To make my family, give them a... There's one story where there's this rich man. He came, he retired and he got he gave all his money. He came to Vrindavan to live in Vrindavan. He gave all his money to his family. And, people were glorifying him. He gave up everything and he's come to live in Vrindavan. And people were glorifying how advanced he was. And Prabhupada wasn't impressed. He said, no, he gave all his money to his family. He should have given his money to Krishna. This is the purpose of money. Because we see even then, he's still within attachment. He's trying to do everything he can to make sure his family is comfortably situated. He's attached. He's not acting in a way to give up the attachment. Obviously make some arrangement. You don't just neglect them completely. Make some arrangement. But then at least 50% of the money give to Krishna. And so this is the thing. We see that oftentimes devotees, grihasthas, whatever, they have money, yet they don't use it for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. This is what money is for, is to help to spread the glories of Krishna, to help devotional service prosper, to help devotional service expand. And so we see that the facility that is awarded to a grihastha is meant to be used in service to others. Otherwise, one becomes attached. And it gets to the point where you don't like anyone to come to your house, where you don't give money to anyone, you just keep all your money to yourself. And what happens is this just increases our material desires. We want to use the money more and more to satisfy my senses. The house is more and more to satisfy my senses. If you do not use whatever you have in the service of others, then you become attached to it. And more and more you just want to use that to satisfy the senses. So this is the point that's being made here. He should learn to renounce his desire for wife and children by experiencing family life. On Ram Navami, I was thinking about this. One of the reasons, Prabhupada says, one of the reasons that Lord Chaitanya came, Lord Ramachandra came, was to show how married life is suffering. And because you see that Lord Ramachandra actually went through so many different austerities and difficulties, so much pain and anguish on account of the situation with his wife, how Sita was stolen by Ravana. So he's caused him a lot of pain. Natural. And anyone who's in a relationship like that, and you have wife, you have husband, children, stuff like that. When the loved one gets sick, etc., this causes a lot of pain. And so this situation causes a lot of pain. So the point here is that they're saying that, you know, it's natural to have this attachment, but the way we give up the attachment is by experiencing it. Because generally speaking, we're not so intelligent. You know, an intelligent person will be told, yes, this is suffering. And they'll just accept that and, okay, that's the end of that. The attachment, you know, is dealt with. But for someone who's not so intelligent, we need to go through the experience to actually become renounced. And it says, learn to renounce his desire for promotion to a higher planet in his next life. Because we see that the four goals of life. You know what the four goals of life are?
Dharma,
artha, karma, and moksha. So dharma means religiosity, not necessarily Krishna consciousness, but religiosity. Artha means economic development, and everyone wants to have a nice situation. And we see it's like you go to India, and suddenly when they ask you where you're coming from. I like to say Pakistan and things like that, because then they'll ask me, they don't speak to me about cricket, and they don't speak to me about how I can organise a visa for them. Because as soon as you mention to anyone, you come from Australia, or you say America, it's like, they think the footpaths are paved with gold, and there's gems and gemstones in the gutters, and they just have some idea of how it's such a wonderful place. And everyone's desiring to come here because they're after economic development. Because generally speaking, in India or other poor countries, they're not so well, the economic development is not so developed there. It's poor countries, and it's difficult, very difficult. Whereas in Australia, such an interesting country, you can just lie around all day and do nothing, the government will give you money. Interesting country. So they hear about these things, they just want to come here and enjoy their senses because they think they'll have a better standard of living. So everyone's interested in artha. And it says, also part of this artha can be elevation to the heavenly planets, because we see the standard of living on the heavenly planets is many thousands of times more wonderful than what it is here. I mean, just for instance, there's a great industry in this world making perfumes. Why do they need to make all these perfumes?
Huh?
Yeah, the body stinks. The body is such a bad smell. They have these rivers. It's described in the fifth canto, it describes the Bhumandala. And they have there's this big, big mountain. I forgot the name of the mountain. But anyhow, there's this mango tree growing on top of this mountain, and it's hundreds of miles high. And the mangoes are big as elephants. And they drop on the side of the mountain, and they've got tiny little seeds in them. They drop on the side of the mountain, and they're just so juicy, just swoosh, and the juice just goes everywhere and runs down on the side of the mountain. And there's a river of mango juice. And the residents of the heavenly planets, they go to these mountains, this river, and they take bath in the river. And it helps their bodies take on a very wonderful fragrance. And even like as the waves of the ocean, of the river, they're lapping on the bank of the river, and it washes up nuggets of gold. And I was listening to these lectures that Prabhupada was doing a few days ago from the end of chapter of the first canto. And he was describing there how because of Krishna's presence, that the fruits, you know, the trees are so bountiful, the oceans are producing gems and things like that. So we see that, you know, it's kind of interesting. Prabhupada was making some interesting points, like true, economic development or prosperity in this day and age is focused around what? How do you know, what's the gauge or the litmus test of a materially prosperous nation? It's how much technology they have, how developed their technology is, how many bits of plastic they have which they can send emails on and stuff like that. So all this is just plastic. Their computers are just different bits of plastic that are modified in various ways, and a few pieces of metal. And most of it's plastic. And we see that, if you've got a nice car in the garage, or maybe two cars, you've got a couple of TV sets. I remember when I was, what year would that have been? Probably about 1963 or 4. Like, you know, everyone had black and white TVs, but if someone had a colour TV, they were really, although desirable people to visit because they had a colour TV, you know. But these days, you know, like everyone's got them. And even it's kind of funny, you know. When you go in Bombay, sometimes I go from, you know, when I'm staying there, I stay at Chowpatty, go to Juhu, you catch the train in Juhu. And as you're going down the train track, you see all these like slums. I mean, you know, slums here and slums there are completely different. In India, slum has a new meaning. They live on the side of the railway track in houses made of plastic bags. Who's from Bombay here? Anyone from Bombay? Anyone been to Bombay? And they're just amazing, these plastic bag houses. They live in them. You know, Bombay's quite nice weather. I mean, you know, it never gets this cold. Anyhow, so they're living in these slum houses. They're doing, like, you know, like they'll have all the sleepers and the railway tracks piled up on the side of the train for them to, you know, do repairs and run. So they make their little cow packy things on that, and they dry their clothes over, just everything on the side of the railway track, you know. And then, so you're driving past at night, and at night time you're going past in the train, and you see like this flickering colour light. They've got colour TVs in their plastic bag houses, you know, watching the cricket, you know. Just amazing what this thing, and they're considering it's a nice life, living on the side of the railway track in a plastic bag house. They've got a car system on the side of the track. And so, you know, for us, we think, oh gosh, how abominable to live in such a situation. But then if you analyse that in relation to the heavenly planets, I mean, they look down at us and think, oh boy, who could ever want to live like that? But it's described in the third canto how the living entity finds a particular kind of satisfaction in the species of life they appear, and they're not averse to being situated in that situation. Even if they take birth as a pig or a dog or a worm and stool, they think it's wonderful. This is the nature of mind. This is the covering potency of material energy. She covers over our intelligence, so we think, oh, this is such a nice situation. Couldn't get any better. I get to eat nice warm stool every day. Couldn't get any better than this. But from our perspective, we think, oh, this is so horrible. My situation is very nice. It couldn't get any better. You've heard that expression? Doesn't get better than this? That's a sign of limited intelligence. If you think it doesn't get any better than this, it means you don't know what good is. Because this is a horrible situation. We're faced with birth, death, old age and disease. It doesn't get any better than this. That's the reality of the material world. It doesn't get any better than that. You are born, guaranteed. You will get sick, guaranteed. You will get old, guaranteed. And you will die, guaranteed. Nothing else is guaranteed. That's as good as it gets. So to think that this is a wonderful situation is foolishness. We need to understand what the wonderful situation is. To think that the heavenly planets is a wonderful situation is also foolishness. Even Lord Brahma, he lives for thousands and thousands and thousands of millions of years. He's, you know, like it says to Hasyuta Parihantamahadyabrahmanudu, that 1,000 ages taken together. What's that? How many years is that?
2,000,000,000.
No, 1,000 ages. 4,300,000,000 years is 12 hours. And then so one day is 8,600,000,000. Can you conceive of that? Even if it's talking about minutes, could you conceive of that? It's just such a big number. Yeah. So the thing is, like, in this, even he, as it is, it says, Ah Brahma Bhuvana Loka Purna Avartana Chana Mamapetya Purpaya Purna Jana Lavidyate, from the highest planet, from the last planet, down to the lowest, the meanest insect. All places of misery when repeated birth and death take place. But one who returns to Krishna's own abode never takes birth again. So, you know, when thinking that in this material world we have so many nice facilities, and as Prabhupada was explaining these lectures earlier, it was really nice. He was talking about how in the previous ages, when Krishna was present on the planet, Kunti was glorifying him, how everywhere was so opulent. And she was talking about how the fruit, the trees are very abundant, they're just giving fruit freely. The grains, they're producing so many nice grains, you know, on the ocean. Actually, there's still a place in near Namibia, in Africa, where gems wash up on the beach. I mean, the government owns them, they go there. But this is how it came. You actually have to go digging holes, you know. The gems would be washed up on the beach, you know, and the pearls. And so she was talking about how all these natural opulences are there. And Prabhupada makes the point. He said Kunti was the same, that all the slaughterhouses are functioning very nicely, the factories are very productive. This was not considered to be wealth. True wealth was considered to be grains and cloth and gems and, you know, all the natural things, all the bounties the earth naturally produces. And the thing is, if you take care of the earth nicely, then these things come automatically. You don't have to work hard. The grains just grow automatically. The gems are just washed up on the shore. You just go pick them up. You don't have to work hard. You know, it's described in the Krishna book in many places how the cows were so happy during Krishna's time, and the milk pack was so fatty that the milk was just dripping from their udders, and the pasture grounds would become muddy, not from water, but from milk. There's so much opulence there. You know, Nanda, the king of Braj, he was so opulent. What was his opulence? Color TVs, computers, the latest iPhone, all these different things, the latest car. No. Milk, butter, ghee. These things were his opulences. And the people were satisfied. So we see now the whole idea of what is opulence is just so twisted. And even now you find, they're saying, the economic situation is very good. I don't know if it's so good. Go try and buy a banana that actually has taste. Huh? You get these long, like, they look like they're made in a factory almost. They all look exactly the same. You know, it's like so often you buy the banana and there's no taste. Or you buy, you know, an avocado, and the seeds in the avocado these days are getting so big. And as Kali Yuga goes on, the seeds will get bigger and bigger and bigger, and the fruit part will get smaller and smaller. And it'll get to the point where there will practically be no fruit at all. And we're finding that fruit is becoming so, and so expensive. Isn't it? So expensive. And the interesting thing is, technology is becoming cheaper and cheaper. Yeah? It's becoming so cheap. You know, cars. In India now, you can buy a car for 1 lakh rupee. This was considered to be a very significant development or achievement in India. Tata is selling a car for 1 lakh, means $3,000. And this is like, you know, in all the papers, front page, this is heralded as a huge, significant achievement. Yeah? But look at the price of food. It's just going up and up and up and up and up. Yeah. The thing is, you can't, like Prabhupada said, you can't eat nuts and bolts. So what's the point of it? Why make them so cheap? We need food, we need, you know, grains and vegetables and things like that to survive. Yeah, it's getting more and more expensive. It's just, you know, like, what was it last year? Bananas were something like $20 a kilo? Or something mad like that? I'm not sure if it was that much, but it was just so expensive. No, but now they're coming down a bit, but, you know, any fruit you just go and buy, it's just so expensive. Potatoes. I remember when I was a child, we used to buy bags of potatoes this big. And it was less than a dollar for a big bag of potatoes like that. And you just put it, you know, in a dark place and they last for a long time. Now, potatoes, you're paying, you know, a fortune. You go to a shop and you buy an apple for $2. One apple. Yeah, it's just unbelievable the way things are going. And we're thinking we're becoming so advanced. And we're thinking, like the points being made here, it's like we need to understand that it doesn't matter where you go in this material world, there is so much difficulty. You need to, meditate upon this all the time. It doesn't matter. You may think so-and-so's got a better situation because they're living in a big house, they've got lots of money, they've got lots of servants. But they're exactly the same situation. They're in anxiety about their situation. They're desiring to have more material offices, more material benefits, more material facilities. They're looking at someone else who's got more than they think, oh, I'd like to be like them. Everyone in the material world is the same. They're always hankering and lamenting. They're hankering for what they don't have and lamenting about what they've lost. This is the situation of the material world. But we need to understand, and that's why it's saying here, is by studying the year, it's saying, learn to renounce the desire for promotion for the higher person in his next life, I was saying thus today, by studying the effects of time. What does that mean? By studying the effects of time.
Seeing how we age. The material body.
That will cause you to desire to live in the heavenly planet because they live many millions of times longer than I do. What it's saying there is, you study the effects of time. Krishna says, Avrama Bhuvana Loka, Purna, Avakimoja. They're all taking repeated birth and death. Doesn't matter whether it's like an insect that lives for a fraction of a minute or a second, like an amoeba lives for such a short time. There's so many insects that live for such short times. You can see, very easy to see. They're born, they get old, they get sick, they die. It's very easy for us to see that. Lord Brahma goes through the same thing. The residents in the heavenly planets, they go through the same thing. They live for millions of years. It's described that the heavenly planets, 6 months on this level, on our planet, is equal to one day in their time. 12 hours. So they live for much longer than we do. Lord Brahma, one 12-hour period is 4,300,000,000 years. I see you smiling. You like that idea. Huh? But the thing is that he still has to go through birth, death, old age and disease. He's not free from it. Hiranyakashipu thought he was free from that. He thought Brahma was free from that. But I said, no, I still have to die. I can't give you immortality because I'm not immortal. And Lord Brahma is an intelligent person. He understands his limitations. So the thing is that we also need to be clearly aware that no matter what situation is there in the material world, it's the same thing that we're experiencing. It's the same limited duration, limited enjoyment, limited happiness. Distress is there everywhere. Everywhere in the material world, Upalaya Shashvatam, it's temporary and it's full of misery. Everywhere. It doesn't matter where you go. From the highest planet down to the lowest, everywhere is the same thing. It's just packaged a little bit differently. All it is. So don't have any aspirations for enjoying this material world. We need to give up these aspirations and meditate on this. See how, yes, even Brahma is suffering. Even Indra, the king of heaven, is suffering. He's so much in anxiety about his position. He's so much in anxiety that someone, when who was it was performing the yagyas? Was it Pritha? Was performing yagyas, and so he dressed himself up as a sannyasi to steal the sacrificial horse because he's worried that the creature was going to become. I can't hear you. The Indra dressed himself up as a sannyasi, is what I said. Yeah. He dressed himself up as a sannyasi to steal the horse because he was concerned that Pritha was trying to become the king of the heavenly planets. So even someone in a big position like that is worried that he's going to lose everything. He's worried that someone else is out of the position. We see that is the nature in this world. People are so worried about losing their positions that they cling onto it. And Prabhupada would say that even up to the point of death, we see some of these politicians, they'll do everything they can to stay in their job up to the point of death. They're so attached. So this connection is mature. Well, it doesn't matter. You know, you think someone's so much better off than you. They may be in a limited way, but they still have the same problem. Still have the same anxiety. And the only way free from this is the process of devotion. So as we see, this is what's being pointed out here, is just to engage yourself in devotion. So, you know, become introspective, reflect over these things, look at how all living entities go through the same things. Janma Ritu Jaravyani, Dukkha Dosha Nidashana. Krishna says that in Gita. We need to contemplate the miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease. Because it doesn't matter what material body you take, you will experience those things. You will guarantee experience those things. Huh? So, and here they're encouraging you, about, you know, to perform austerities. And this is the process of devotional service. Of course, we're not saying to perform, you know, additional austerities to what we're already doing. Prabhupada said that, you know, Prabhupada did not perform austerities. He said there's already enough austerities in this material world. Our austerities are we rise early in the morning, we take bath, and we attend Mahalati, we chant Hare Krishna, we eat Krishna Prasad. These are not difficult austerities, they're not unpleasant austerities. Austerity doesn't necessarily mean it has to be unpleasant, because some people have the idea that austerity means, you know, lying on a bed of nails, or you know, up to your neck in freezing cold water, or you're sitting out in the blazing hot sun doing meditation with fires around you, and you know, or like Rani Kashyapu stands on his tippy toes for, you know, 10,000 years to achieve, you know, various powers and stuff like that. These are difficult austerities, and usually these difficult austerities are either in the mode of passion, or there's another really interesting austerity. There was one powerful personality, he wanted to get, I can't remember. He wanted to get this benediction where whoever's head he touched would split into a thousand, explode into a thousand pieces. So what he did, he was performing this austerity to get this benediction from Lord Shiva. So he started to slice pieces off his body and offer them into the fire. So this is an austerity of mode of ignorance, I mean, destroying the body. So finally, you know, Lord Shiva wasn't coming, he was like chopping his body up and this and this everywhere. Finally, he thought, okay, I'm going to chop my head off and throw that into the fire. And Lord Shiva came and said, okay, don't do that, that's taking it too far. Yeah. And then so he told Lord Shiva what he wanted. He said, I want a benediction, and whoever's head I touch with my finger will split into thousands of pieces. So Lord Shiva said, okay, go ahead, you can have it. It wasn't very difficult for him to do that. And then so immediately what happened was that this asura, he said, okay, now I'll touch Lord Shiva's head. And because actually the reason he wanted that austerity is because he wanted Lord Shiva's wife. So he got this austerity. And then so Lord Shiva starts to run away and he's like calling out the Lord for help. And then so Krishna appeared in the form of a dwarf brahmachari. And brahmachari. And then he tricked this asura. He said, well, why are you making so much energy chasing after Lord Shiva? And he said, oh, Lord Shiva, he's giving me this benediction that whoever's head I touch will split into thousands of pieces. So I'm testing it out. I'm trying to test out Lord Shiva, he's running away. He said, oh, but you know, everyone knows Lord Shiva. I mean, he associates with the ghosts of the hobgoblins. I mean, who could believe anything he says? And this guy's become a little bit thinking about that. He says, if you don't believe me, touch your own head and find out. So he touches his own head and he says, splits in a thousand pieces. That's the Lord of the world, isn't it? So we see that, you know, people are always after trying to improve themselves in this material world, but actually never achieve. So the point being is that, you know, we don't want to perform austerities that are very difficult in mode of passion, mode of ignorance. The austerities we perform in devotional service, controlling the mind and the senses, the tongue, the body, the genitals, we're using methods which are actually spiritual. And we don't perform, you know, these extreme external things. We perform austerities that are connected directly with Krishna. We chant Krishna's name. We take Krishna prasad. We rise in the morning. Why? Not to perform some extreme austerity, or you know, to, you know, just sleep, no sleep or anything like that. We rise early in the morning to come and see Krishna and to glorify Krishna. So all the austerities we perform, you know, we associate only with devotees. We restrict our speech. We don't speak nonsense. We speak about Krishna. We restrict our tongue in many different ways. We restrict our mind. We restrict the mind by thinking about Krishna. So all these things, all these areas. Because you see with like, you know, the jnanis and the yogis and different things, they're performing different types of austerities, but they're doing it and it's connected to some not so spiritual thing. They may be performing it to get some type of siddhi. And there's different siddhis where they can become lighter in their life, they're smaller and smaller, heavier and heavier, so they'll create a universe and different things. You know, the universe can create a planet or something. You know, there's so many different austerities that perform to get these material benefits, so they perform the material austerity. So again, the same thing, because they're doing that for their own sense gratification, this causes them to become bound up, even though they're achieving extraordinary powers. You know, by our estimation, extraordinary powers. Still, because they're doing it for their own gratification, they become bound up. Devote those things to the pleasure of Krishna. And so these things are liberated. And we see that all the austerities devotees perform are connected directly to Krishna. So there's no attachment that comes from that. If you perform anything for the satisfaction of yourself or for the satisfaction of your extended self, meaning family, relatives, etc., that will cause bondage. But if you do it for the pleasure of Krishna, that will bring about liberation. So everything we do, Krishna points us out to our duties, Yatharoshi, Yadashanasi, this is whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, whatever austerities you perform, you do that as an offering to me. And in this way you'll become free from bondage to work and its various auspicious and inauspicious results. It's the only way. You do it for Krishna, you become free. You do it for yourself. Even though we see in devotional service, under the guise of doing it for Krishna, we're still doing it for ourselves. You know, we may have a service in ISKCON, for instance, where we're in a position of authority. And we use it, you know, I'm not saying everyone does that, but it's seen, you know, it does happen from time to time, that someone may have this position of authority and use it to lord over others, to control others, to tell them what to do. And it may not necessarily be directly connected with devotional service, or maybe it is connected with devotional service, but the attitude we have towards those others is like, I'm in charge here. No. Prabhupada was explaining that the best leader is the best servant. We do this with a move to try to enhance a person's devotional service. Not that I just want to control things, but I want to serve people. The more we have the service attitude, then the more qualified we are to lead. This, like we see Srila Prabhupada himself, when he was in 26 Second Avenue, right? The most qualified personality. And, you know, he was cooking the prasad, he was serving the prasad, and everyone would eat till the, you know, and he would encourage them, eat up to your neck. You know? He said, eat till you waddle like a duck. And so Prabhupada would cook so much and feed them so much, he said, look, more, take more. And they would take more and more and more. So much so they all have to lie down afterwards, they're eating so much. And they would have Prabhupada would clean up and Prabhupada would wash the pots. Wonderful service attitude. Wonderful. And actually this is the key to progress in devotional service, is our service attitude. The more we can develop our service attitude, not thinking that I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, I'm in charge here. The more we develop our service attitude, then the more spiritual progress we make, because we're giving up our material attachments. You know, suffering grows. So, you know, the more we're able to connect our activities with Krishna, the more we're able to realize that actually my position is this is what Lord Chaitanya said was the conclusion. That I'm not a Brahmin, I'm not a Chakya, I'm not a Vaishya, I'm not a Sutra, I'm not a Grihastha, I'm not a Vanaprastha, I'm not a Brahmacharya, I'm not a Sannyas. I'm none of these external designations. What am I?
No.
I'm a servant of the low seat of the maintainer of yogis. He's like an ocean of transcendental nectar, and he's always existing in brilliance. Lord Chaitanya himself was saying that. That was his position. You see, in the lives of all our acharyas, they exemplify this mood of das on das. They exemplify it. You know, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, his disciples would come and ask him, you know, what can we do? He said, das osni, I am your servant. Tamara nita das, I am your eternal servant. Remember the duty of the guru, the service of the guru. What is the service of the guru? Is to guide the disciple in spiritual life. So if the guru takes the mood that actually I'm the guru, I'm the master here, you do what I tell you. If he takes that mood, then this is improper. The mood that the guru needs to take is that I am the servant and I am guiding them. My service is to guide them in spiritual life, to bring them to the lotus feet of Krishna or to the lotus feet of Prabhupada. So from the external it may look the same, but the attitude, the mood we need to take is this dasa and dasa, that I am just the servant of the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of the maintainer of the gopis. Thousand times removed. And with this attitude, with this service attitude, this will propel us forward in Krishna consciousness. So, it's just a change of attitude. We put Krishna in the center. As long as we're having this lordly over capacity, it means that I'm putting me in the center. That I think I'm this, I think I'm that. I think I'm the controller, I think I'm the enjoyer. We need to understand that Krishna is the proprietor. Krishna is the controller. Krishna is the enjoyer. The only one. There is no other. Doesn't matter what it is. I may think that this is mine. No. Everything belongs to Krishna. He says that in the Gita. Sarva Loka Maheshwara. He is the proprietor. There is no other proprietor. None. Doesn't matter whether it's Radha, doesn't matter whether it's Vishnu. Doesn't matter who it is. Every form of Krishna, this is explained in the fifth chapter of the Adilila. Every form of the Lord, every Vishnu avatar except Krishna takes the mood of dasya, takes the mood of servitude. Only Krishna, ekale ishvara Krishna, arasabhavritta. There is only one master, and that is Krishna. So we need to understand that I am not the master, I am the servant. Krishna is the only master. And if we're able to understand that, if we're able to take this seriously, in every facet of our lives, not just, when I'm in the temple, I understand that Krishna is the master, but at home, I'm the master. I'm in charge here. I'm the man, and the lady does what I say. If we have that attitude, we're thinking that I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. But Krishna is the only controller. Krishna is the only enjoyer. This is so clearly spelled out in all our Shastra scriptures. So if we can understand this and try to apply that in our lives, then we'll be successful. But to the degree we try to be the controller, that degree will suffer. And it may be very subtle, but it'll affect us. So we need to develop that consciousness that I'm just the servant. Okay, thank you very much for patiently listening. A bit unprepared, I was untold not so long ago to be passed. I was asked. Because I think I'm in control, I don't like being told things. Any questions or?
One comment, yes, Buddha Swami, you always say, organize your meeting.
Service attitude is vital. Without appropriate service attitude, it will, our pride will block us from making progress. If Lord Balaram is taking the mood of servant, if Radharani is taking the mood of servant, if Nityananda is taking the mood of servant, I think that's a pretty good place to be. And that's like the same, even Lord Chaitanya, when he was reflecting on this, it describes this in the Adilila. He was reflecting on Radharani and these other personalities, how they're saying, and he was thinking this is a really nice situation. So he himself came as a servant to experience the bliss, because actually the bliss of being the servant of Krishna is better than the bliss of being Krishna. That's why he came as Lord Chaitanya, because he wanted to experience that bliss. So the bliss of being the servant is greater than the bliss of being the controller. So the more we're able to immerse ourselves in that bliss, the happier we'll be. And because we'll be properly situated in this world. So it's so important to develop this service attitude. Anything else?
I read in, I think, Purijan Prabhu and Surendranath Ney,
he says the mind,
I think he says like should be beaten into place like a piece of metal on an anvil.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could elaborate on that, like explain how you, I mean it seems a bit violent.
There's a statement from Bhaktisiddhanta in Saraswati Thakur where he says that you beat the mind 100 times in the morning with a broom and 100 times in the evening with shoes. Yeah. I don't think it means physically bashing yourself up. Well, there are people who do that. It's what they call it. Sometimes you hear stories of girls who are like, they don't like what their body looks like, so they get into this self-mutilation, cut themselves up with razor blades and different things like that because they think they're ugly. I don't think it refers to things like that. My understanding is that more, it's like, you know, it's just like, you know, when you want to, I used to do metalwork at school, so when you want to beat something into shape, you need to apply heat, and you know, bang it with a hammer, or you bang it around something that is shaped to the shape you want. So the point being is like you have to, you know, like you heat, why do you heat the metal? To make it malleable, to make it, you know, so you can shape it easier, because sometimes if you beat metal, particular types of metal, especially if they have, I think that, if they have a high carbon content, I think, if you beat them, they're brittle, they crack. So you need to heat them up, because as you beat them, they cool down, they become more brittle. So, you know, these analogies are used to give us an understanding of what it is we need to do. So the shape is already there. The shape of the pure servant of Krishna is already there. So we need to beat our mind down, or beat it into that shape so it becomes a pure servant of Krishna. You know, force the mind to be what it is you need it to be. And as actually mentioned in the 6th chapter of the Gita, that when the mind is engaged in the service of the senses, the mind is your worst enemy. This is a purport, in the purport of the 6th chapter. But when the mind is engaged in the service of Krishna, then the mind is your best friend. So this is the shape, you know. This shape here is like the servant of the self. So I don't want that shape because the mind is my enemy. But this shape here is a servant of Krishna. So that's the shape we're trying to give the mind. It's the shape of the servant of Krishna. So that's how I would understand it. And sometimes it requires, you know, extreme force on your behalf. Because, you know, I think most of us have very active minds. You know, you sit down and watch the devotees chant, you know, you can see they're getting distracted by so many things. You know, I mean, like, my phone is a PDA, I find it very useful, but I also find it an enemy at times because I get distracted by it. Oh yeah, I remember this right now. This is a distraction. We need to get ourselves in a situation where we can just sit down and peacefully chant the holy name of the Lord continuously. Kirtaniya Sadahari, 24 hours a day, every day. Well, they say 24/7. That's the goal, is that, you know, 24/7 I'm just engaged in Krishna service. I'm thinking only of Krishna. I'm doing only for Krishna. I'm chanting only Krishna's name. I don't speak about anything else. So that takes some beating. Because the mind is very, as Arjuna he says, Chashuram Himala Krishna Pranati Balabhidam. That the mind is very turbulent and obstinate, and sometimes more difficult to control than the wind. I mean, you know, Melbourne's famous for the wind. Have you ever tried to stop the wind? Like, it was a couple of weeks ago, it was blowing up at 130 kilometers an hour or something. Try stopping that. Put a big sheet up, okay, I'm going to stop the wind. Maybe out in the middle of the bay before you know about it. You know? So the mind's like, actually, the mind's worse than that. More, Arjuna says to Krishna, he says, more difficult than vaya eva sadushkaram, more difficult than controlling the wind. Wind's easy. Yeah, and actually, Arjuna could control, he used to have these vaya astras, where he could actually conjure up the wind with his astra. He could control the wind, direct it, and like that, with his astra. Very powerful. But he said, controlling the mind is more difficult. So it takes some serious focus. And Krishna explains, he says, from wherever the mind may wander due to its flickering of stagnation, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. So it goes, come back here, settle down, just be a down boy. Yeah? You've got to keep bringing it back, bringing it back. Even when we're chanting, the mind's going here, the mind's going there. Bring it back, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Come back, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Constantly, not just you do it once. And my tendency is like that. When I sit down and get real serious, I start praying the whole time, say, please just allow me to focus and pray to Krishna, pray to Prabhupada. Just allow me to focus on the whole name. And that's all right for about 2 or 3 minutes to start, and that's about all that happens. But we have to be doing that constantly. Constantly bring it back wherever it wanders, because as soon as you're a little bit inattentive, the mind's off somewhere else. And inattention, it's just like when you shave. I mean, these days it's much easier. But if you ever go to India, they use these open razors for shaving. Now, if there's a little bit of inattention with open razors, I get so nervous when you're under here with the open razor. And you finish. Really sharp. So a little bit of inattention is blood. And sometimes, if there's too much inattention, serious blood. Have you ever been inside someone showing you up and they cut your head?
Yes.
Sometimes you come out looking like that. Sometimes they slash you to pieces. It's inattention. So the same is there in our devotional practice. If we are inattentive, then it can lead to disaster. Because what happens is we become inattentive, we become attached to an object of the sense. Just think, this one looks nice. Oh, okay. And every time you see, you see the same thing, the same sense, whether it's a person, whether it's an object, whatever. Oh, I like this. I used to be attached to a particular type of car. And every time I'd see that car, there's one of those, and look at the colours. But we're becoming attached to an object of the sense. And this will cause us to take birth again. Because unless we give up these desires, unless the desires are satisfied, they'll bring us back. So we have to keep, whenever the mind wanders off on a different object, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back. Constantly. And that's what it means, in my understanding, to beat it into shape. Bring it back. This is not what I want. Come back here. You stop doing this. Come back here. And this is what we're doing. We're focusing on Krishna. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Radha Srila Bhagavatam ki
jai.
Jai Jai Ho Premanandi.
Jai 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 Jai